This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And you know what Tuesday means, Hunter?
Let's see. Does it mean it's 1 week till Election Day?
Yes, it does. I can't believe it. It's almost here. I'm seeing lots of candidate postings. It's getting down to the wire. So we've got candidates running for the rest of the week. We'll be chatting with some of them, and that'll be great. But no, it's actually Real Estate Insights Tuesday.
Well,
so we're going to talk all things real estate. Mm-hmm. Yes, and joining us today from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, is Anna Parker and Elizabeth Smith from the Smith Mortgage Team. Ladies, welcome. It's great to see you both.
Thank you.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. Huh? How's it going?
We made it. We're here.
It's like, it's so funny because in the radio business, in the real estate business, the mortgage business, everything's fluid. Things can change on a dime. And so we appreciate you guys carving out time to be here today.
Oh, yeah. Everything does change minute to minute sometimes.
Sure does.
It's the only constant. Change.
Yes.
There we go. There's my, you know, deep thoughts for the day. All right. Well, let's jump right in, Elizabeth. What's been happening with mortgage rates and all that stuff since we last saw you?
You know, they've gone the wrong direction. Let's just put
have
it that
they?
Way. They have. Today's not the greatest day in the market. Inflation popped higher this morning, 3.8%. That was not expected. So therefore, the bond market doesn't care for that. That's not a good sign. So that has, made us basically lose a little ground, probably about an eighth of a point in rate today.
Yeah.
Up a little higher. Definitely has trended higher over the last month. The Iran conflict, and every time someone talks, they think, oh, this is so great. Well, that's worn off. Now, like every time there's going to be a resolution. And the problem is there's not anything that ends up occurring. So now we've actually seen where the market's just like not listening to anybody's.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So it's just like.
They're just
la,
over
la, la,
it.
La, la.
Yeah, they're like, whatever. So they've kind of gotten
good.
That.
It's the peanuts teacher effect.
Yeah, literally. Oh, that's right, such a great way of putting it. You know, but the purchase market's still really strong and people are still buying. We're doing a lot of, we're averaging probably, 10 or 11 deals a month right now, which is, that's an uptick from the last couple of years. And, people are still getting, concessions and having sellers pay closing costs. But, like Amy and I talked the last time and she kind of got on that, hey, by the way, you're going to have to give something up.
Yeah.
Seeing a lot of that lately where people are kind of like, hey, I just gave up this one. I sold my house and I gave them all these things. I want to see that on the next transaction. So I think that conversation's occurring a little bit more and people are starting to kind of wake up that you're not necessarily going to be able to get everything you want on both sides of a deal. And, the market's reflecting it. But, I'm seeing concessions on pretty much every transaction right now where the seller's paying something towards the closing costs is what that
means. So is that more normal world stuff, though? Is it?
Realistically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was going to sell my house today, I honestly, I'd factor in 6% real estate commissions because that's always kind of been the norm. If I get less than that, then okay, great. But I would factor that in automatically so the agents get paid. And then I would also factor in, probably $10,000 in seller closing costs because buyers, it's hard to come up with a down payment, right? I mean, you're talking $400,000 purchase prices on average. Coming up with 3 or 5% is a lot. So when you're looking at the math of can I afford to sell, it's minus these feature, minus that information up front. And then I think you have more of a realistic number to play with and you can price your house accordingly to get it moved. So, I mean, I'm just taking over Anna's role today, but.
No, that's okay.
We see that more when the rates creep up. We definitely see that more. So they have more money to do a buy down and get the rate a little lower, things like that.
But then the other side of it, you said with like the inflation numbers coming out and raising a little bit higher, that has ripple effects out there too.
Yep.
Again, you said it is hard for people just in the economy, sort of in general, it's been hard to save money. It's just so tight.
Yeah, it's really tight. I think the gas prices are really just the driving force behind everything right now.
So
of course, the gas price is going up. That's not surprising that inflation jumped because it affects everything you buy in the grocery stores. It affects shipping. It affects, every machine that runs off gas. and oil, I guess. So
everything, it's everything.
It is.
Yeah. And it's the engine of all the economy. Yeah.
Well, that's why it's such a hot topic and a hot thing. I did some research on that, the Strait of Hormuz, and it's like, whoa, this is a big deal, because it's just this like 20-mile wide, and it could affect the entire global economy. It was terrifying. Part of me was like, wow, but it's a real thing. Like this has a driving effect internationally, worldwide.
Well, and it's interesting you say that the market is starting to just ignore it now, because I did see something, and Hunter, maybe you saw it, where there was something where the Iranians are like, well, okay, we'll deal, but we want to keep control who goes in and out. And it's like, no.
Exactly.
That's a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. Come on. Yeah. For just what you said, it's like, there's just no way.
And nobody trusts each other. So when you're dealing with a bunch of people that don't trust each other and historically don't trust each other, eventually the market's going to react to that and go, until we see something actually occur, and we're not buying off on this, so they're going to continue to be conservative, which means higher rates, slower rate cuts. You got the change of the head of the Federal Reserve, all of those changes, all of those things just create a little bit of anxiety. Anxiety creates money constriction and higher rates.
Right. And people not being as, being a little more risk averse, and when it's already kind of a stressful situation, it's a stressful prospect anyway. You add all this sort of uncertainty, and I don't like uncertainty.
Yeah. And it's, okay, so we've probably gone up about a half a point. Now we're sitting in the mid sixes, which is really not that bad. Let's put it in perspective. I don't want to be like, oh, the rates are high. Like, that's not it. It was trending into the fives, which is a really nice sweet spot for us. Like, that's where we like to see it. It's very much the good, but it's not like outside of that. It's not, holy crud, we're almost at 8%. That did happen a couple of years ago. So we're not there. And I think that, it's still a good time to buy. And that if you do go in at 6.5% and the rates go to 5.5, you refinance later. I'm closing my refinance this afternoon. So I'm like, I jumped on the bandwagon. I dropped my rate a point, and that's what you do.
Yeah. So I have to wonder too, because everybody is so connected to everything. I mean, you can literally pop on your phone or get an alert. And so you're knowing constantly. It's like I'm almost having a little ticker tape like back in the day, when normally we wouldn't even check the news until like maybe in the evening. Now you're on it all the time.
Oh yeah. And you don't even know what's true anymore. Like,
that's true.
I look on, Facebook, I'm like, is that a real news channel? Is that a real, did that really happen? I mean, at first, like, every day, and whatever you talk about, obviously, we've discussed this, your phone will feed you. So whatever you're looking at,
the algorithms.
So yeah, the algorithm's like, oh, you want to know about this? So look at this. And it's not like it's deciphering if it's accurate or not. So yeah, you got to just take it with what your current situation is, what your current scenario is, and does it make sense financially for you? That's the key.
Yeah, because life has got to go on. You've got to do what you've got to do. What is it? I have the 60s, because I always add Democrats to my D's. You got to add that, because you never know. Policy, like you said, everything affects real estate, right?
It does.
Anna?
Everything affects real estate. Yep, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, and it's crazy how it is all interconnected. Okay, let's go ahead and take our first break. Again, we're talking Real Estate Insights with Anna Parker and Elizabeth Smith. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Salem Clinic Urgent Care and Color Tile of Salem.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Real Estate Insights Tuesday with Anna and Elizabeth. Okay, Anna, so you've got, the markets, again, it feels like things are kind of getting back to somewhat of a normal. I was talking to some friends the other day about the unicorn years, and those of us that were part of that, it was just this frenzy, and it was woo, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And now everything is a little bit back to normal. Elizabeth, you mentioned things have ticked up a little, but you go and look, and you kind of look at the timeline of houses, and you see some are selling faster than others when the market is slowing down. Is there magic there? What is that?
I wish it was magic and that I had the magic wand. No, I mean, honestly, you are seeing some houses come on the market and go off quickly.
Yeah.
And I've got an example I can share with you later. But really, I mean, that's kind of the big question most people is like, how is it that some houses are coming on the market and then selling quickly while others are sitting there? And honestly, the answer is pretty simple. Buyers are being more selective because they have more options. And it really comes down to sellers I always tell the agents on our team, we cannot manufacture motivation for a seller. Mm-hmm. And Amy has said it, she may have said it here on the show, is that if you're a seller in this market, yes, it is becoming and is in some ways far more normal of what we're used to historically. But if you're not in it to win it as a seller right now, don't get in it. But really, it kind of comes down to those houses that come on the market and sell quick, quote unquote, quickly. It comes down to three things: pricing, presentation, and preparation. Like, how prepared is the seller to get into the market? And that's making sure the house is prepared and presented well, that they have done their, you know, they're very normal or kind of logical about their pricing. And are they prepared, to Elizabeth's point last segment, are they prepared for what that looks like cost-wise to getting their house sold? Like, it is not the unicorn years where you could literally throw anything on the market and a buyer would fall all over themselves to pick it up. Buyers are being more selective. I mean, for example, one of our agents on our team met with a buyer yesterday, and his price point, surprisingly, was like $250 to $375, and he had over 20 options that were financeable, Elizabeth. They were. And I told her, I told our agent, I said, make sure they have floor coverings and that the roof looks okay. That's usually the two big items. He had 20 options to look at, which is bananas in our market. Because the average sales price in Salem, we were just looking at it yesterday, his team's like $460. So for him to have those kind of options right now is like, okay.
Now, hopefully. was he kind of lowballing it with that, or was that actually, no, that's what it was?
That's his price point. That's his specific price point. But my point is, like, if a seller is going to get into the market, you really want to be paying attention to those three things. Are you prepared? Are you presented properly in how you've set your house up? And are you looking at realistic pricing? Not looking at pricing of 2020 to 2022, but pricing of today.
Well, I would think that he came in rather prepared, you know, pretty much knowing he had those kind of options at that price point.
Yeah, I mean, for buyers, and Elizabeth will agree with this, I'm sure. Buyers, we always want to know what you're looking for. But for sellers, we want to know, where do we compare to our sold comps, not just our active competition. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the piece. Like, the correct pricing matters more now than ever. That's when you see houses sitting on the market for weeks and in some cases months at a time. It's either because they would not listen to their educated realtor, or their realtor is not educated in getting them priced properly from the get-go, or as close to. Right. Amy talks about it as like a dartboard. And the center bullseye is like where a buyer will snap you up quick. And we're trying to get as close to that from the first stab as possible. But proper pricing is the first thing that usually will get a house under contract quickly, more than anything else.
Yeah. And honestly, folks listening to your real estate insights on this show, I mean, you guys go over it again. And you do lay out sort of what the price range is, and that where he priced his is that a lot of first time home buyers are in that price range. Mm-hmm. And I would think that 20 offers, that actually doesn't surprise me, really, because it's really hard for younger people. And when I say first time home buyers, we're talking what, 30s now?
Yeah, I think the average first time home buyer is like in the mid 30s.
Yeah.
It's like all of us millennials who are just now paying off our college debt and paying off our credit card debt that are now.
And it's hard to find those homes in there without, you know, a million other people stampeding with you to try to get it and to win, and then you want the house to win the beauty contest. But yeah.
I mean, I think for sellers, the thing that's really important is that you don't let yourself get away with the feeling of trying the market. Like, the days of catching, like being ahead of the wave and the wave catching you, that is no longer right. Like, that was our experience in the unicorn years, 2020 to early 2023. That is no more, right? Like, we have to be very realistic about what's happening in the market. We have to be very realistic about how long do you want to try and test it in terms of your other active comps, and how do you stack up looks wise as well with those active competition.
I remember I had a colleague that I worked with that I was like, it's like you sell your house and buy a new house, sort of like you change your underwear, girl, because she was constantly dipping into the market. And it was very casual for her.
Yeah.
No stress. I'll just pop it out there and see what I can get. Oh, I got a great offer. Okay, I guess I'm selling.
Yeah, I mean, that could still happen if a seller is, like I said, taking into account those three other: presentation, preparation, pricing, because buyers will still pay strong prices. I mean, like I said, we were looking at data yesterday. Houses in Salem Kaiser are still getting about 98 to 99% of their sales price compared to their list price at the time they took the offer. So that's mm-hmm. still strong. Like the pricing mm-hmm. is still, buyers will still pay a good price, a fair price for a property if it is something solid, if it's presented well, that they're like, yeah, this feels like a good solid either investment or in many cases, this feels like my home.
Yeah. Right?
That's usually where buyers, they will pay the price if it feels right and is presented well.
Yeah. So the days of the over asking price, is that pretty much in the past or does that still happen?
You know, in some price points, we are still seeing competing offers mm-hmm. that like 350 to 400, honestly, about probably 300 to 400 if it's financeable. We have still seen some competing offers there. But honestly, the rates and the cash that buyers need, it's tough for them. But we are still seeing that from time to time in certain price points in certain areas of town. Not as common as it was in early 2020, but it still yeah. does happen.
So one of the other things, obviously, and this was always standard, I guess, was having a home inspection. That, again, went by the wayside for a few years where, like you said, it was just literally sight unseen and you'd go in and I don't care if it's a 100-year-old house, I'll just take it. But all that is back. In fact, I would think that's back in more force, is having that inspection because you really want it. You want to know.
In some cases, like if there's a property that's really kind of dicey, that's sometimes a situation where we say, hey, this would be worthwhile and get ahead of it, know what we're yeah. dealing with.
That would mean the seller to do that.
Exactly, yeah. Either yeah. the seller does it before we go active and address items, or we can adjust the three Ps, we can adjust our pricing to account for any of those items, making sure it's still financeable or we're changing yeah. our whole approach. But we just had some clients here in Kaiser. They did a pre-listing inspection, tackled vast majority. Now, I will say this. A pre-listing inspection does not mean nothing will come up in a buyer's inspection. Right? That it's every – I always tell people it's an inspection is a snapshot in time. An inspector mm-hmm. is not a perfect robot, right? So but we do recommend doing it so that you at least have more peace of mind that when I put my house on the market, when I'm in it to win it and I put it on the market – I have a good sense that I've got a solid property that a buyer will want to come in. And then all we're having to deal with is the presentation, right? Like cleaning it out, making sure it's pretty, making sure it's warm and welcoming. So,
and that's more important than ever too. I know we've talked many times on the past sometimes because I check listings too. And this is in other states, more states where people are kind of clamoring to get to where they're like, I'm just going to snap it with my iPhone. I'm going to put it out there. The lighting looks crummy. I left my laundry out. The days of that are long gone. Well, maybe not in some states, but in Oregon, they're not.
No. I mean, honestly, like I was saying, buyers emotionally connect more often than not. Buyers emotionally connect to properties. They want to see clean spaces. They want to have it be really nice curb appeal, and then they'll make a decision. But our presentation, a lot of buyers do their shopping, their window shopping, like 12 to 18 months before they actually put feet to pavement. Right. So they're looking online at all of those listings, all of those photos. And so that's one of the things we talk about, too, with sellers is let's have professional photos done. Let's organize them such that's a sensible walkthrough of the house. And in some cases, you might explore doing a formal virtual tour or some other tools to give folks a good sense. But making sure we're presenting your commodity, so to speak, well, so that it garners a buyer wanting to get off their couch and come walk through your house to see if it's the one they want to ride on.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So, and then as far as things have changing, Elizabeth, from your perspective, from the mortgage side of the perspective, has anything really kind of changed from the crazy, crazy years when it was really a seller's market, but mm-hmm. things have shifted now?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny you brought up the multiple offer thing. I actually did just get one. They won. They offered, the sales price was $425. They settled at $439. Uh-huh. So I do see that occasionally. I think that right now it's an interesting dynamic with sellers versus buyers. Buyers are more cautious, but it seems like once they actually have taken the steps, they've given us the documents and we're like, hey, you're pre-approved, and they have that nice little certificate in their hand, their mental state like changes, and they go from I'm probably gonna buy at the end of summer to we just found the perfect house, can you update the pre-approval letter and get me numbers. They mentally and emotionally, like after they get that, it really kind of kicks it in gear for them. And that's been different, because I think everybody was before just kind of going, oh, hey, I think I should buy a house because the rates are 2%. Like, it's a different emotional reaction to it mm-hmm. versus it, like almost a, I got to jump on this train versus it being like, this is the best for me. And it, in the 2020s, that was just everybody wanted to buy a house because they figured it was a fast money-making opportunity with low rates and such.
Right, right. So a lot of people, you'll get, you know, you're approved up to this level. Does anybody actually go like, I'm approved up to, you know, $900,000. I'm looking in that. I'm not looking at anything lower.
You know, that's so funny because I'll tell them, oh, you're pre-approved for 500. Next thing you know, they send me 6 listings and they're all over 550. And I'm like, did your plan change?
Yeah.
You told me you wanted this payment. That's going to change that. Yeah. So we work backwards into that and give them a double check. I thought you didn't want to have over a $4,000 a month mortgage payment.
Yeah.
Which I've had that conversation 3 times this week. So, and it's only Tuesday.
That's just so, it's you get that number. I've had it. It's like, oh, wow, I can afford that. But then I'm like, yeah, you look at it, it's like, well, the payment side of that and for the rest of the mortgage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's get a little more down to earth here.
Yes.
Oh, come on. That's fully human nature. It's like, you tell me I can spend $50. My kids are going to find something for $55 every time.
Absolutely.
I guess we don't outgrow that. Isn't that crazy?
Very much
like
human nature.
Oh, wow. I'm doing better than I thought.
That's right. If I can make this work, well, I'm then sure. I could easily make an extra 5, 10.
Exactly. They're like, oh, well, I could squeeze that out. I'm like, let me double check that.
So it sounds like some things are different, and but a lot, you know, it's like the more things change, I think the more they stay the same. So that's just interesting to see how it does shift, and it shifts fast. We're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour with the news coming up. We have got so much more to talk about with Anna and with Elizabeth. So come on back for Real Estate Insights Tuesday.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All right, everybody. Welcome back, everybody. Real Estate Insights Tuesday with Anna and Elizabeth. And just a quick reminder, if you miss anything on the show, if you didn't have time to write it down, if you're driving, we drop our podcast typically within an hour after we're done with the live broadcast. You can find them on all the streaming platforms. You can find them at kykn.com under the podcast tab. So everything is there. And again, if you have any questions or anything like that, you can drop us an email at newsmakers@kykn.com. If you've got a question for Anna, for Amy, for Elizabeth, we can get those to them. And then, of course, they drop all their details and information, and that'll always be in show notes. So there's no excuse. If you miss it, you can find it. So there's always, you know, always so much good information. And there's always a lot because you guys share a lot. And some of it's kind of number heavy. So we want to make sure that you can reach out directly either to us and we'll get you through to them and check out their website. Okay, let's move on. This is a good one, Anna. This is more for you. Some of the biggest mistakes that sellers make before they pull the trigger and they list that house.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen, right? Like, but honestly, most of these mistakes are totally avoidable if a seller is prepared, right? We talked about in the last section, preparation is the number. Yeah. And obviously, the number one mistake that a lot of sellers make, or some sellers make, is overpricing their listing from the start, right? Like, going into it and be like, we'll just try it. And if we don't, let's just try this number. And if we don't get the response, we'll reduce it later. And that usually never works out in the way that most people hope for it, especially in our more normal and in some cases buyer-oriented markets or areas. That is not a winning strategy. If your goal is to get your house sold, overpricing it does not work.
Is that where emotion comes in on this? Where it's, you've seen the meme. It's like, here's what I think my house is. Here's what the assessor thinks it is. Yeah. Here's what the tax guy is.
That six panel quadrant.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I would say emotion. It kind of, for me, if we're just going to like take it down to brass tacks, it really kind of comes down to two things. It's emotion or it's ego. when it really, if you just take it down to the basement level, and myself included, right? Like when I sold my house in Kaiser, it was that same thing. Like for me, it was like, oh my God, I have to say I'm a licensed realtor. And so I don't want them to think my house is crap, you know? So, it's really comes down to those two things. But that if we just quote, try it, or we overprice it from the get-go, that is usually more harmful to sellers than they even realize. Because like I said, buyers are starting their search online 12 to 18 months before they even put boots on the ground, but they are always watching the new inventory. I can't tell you how many buyers are like, oh, even when we're under contract, like we borderline say, stop looking at the listing alerts I'm sending you, because they'll be like, oh, this new house came on. I want to go see it. I just saw this one on 123 Main Street. And it's like, chill out. We already deposited your earnest money. But the first couple of weeks of a listing are crucial, because that's giving us our first indication of where did we land on that dartboard for pricing and presentation. And if we have missed the mark and we don't have an offer in that first, because once a listing goes into MLS, it gets pushed out to all of the major websites right away, automatically, right? So buyers will see a listing, and if they have not said to their agent, or they've not, that I want to go see it, or they've not come through an open house to see it, that is the market telling us we did not hit the pricing mark, right? And so we don't want to chase, we don't want to be chasing the market on our pricing. We want to price strategically from the get-go to get the activity. Again, if the goal is to get the house sold, we want to be strategic from the get.
Yeah, and you want to set the tone right off the bat, because there is that perception literally of what's wrong with it.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Which kind of leads into the next mistake that a lot of sellers make, is ignoring kind of some of those small repairs that, you know, we've come like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Like that light bulb being out in my garage is not a big deal. Or, you know, the scuffs on the baseboard, that doesn't matter. That a buyer's not going to even notice that. They notice it. They notice everything about everything. I just took some clients into a really lovely house out in South Salem behind Costco last week, and that was the first thing they noticed. Like the walls had been painted beautifully, had these nice updates, and they immediately honed in on the scuffs on the baseboard.
Wow. Well, I don't blame them.
Nor do I. I mean, it's a fair note, right? So we don't, as sellers, want to avoid some of those small things. So dripping faucets, broken screens on your windows, loose handles on cupboards, or loose cupboard doors sometimes. All of those things, they factor into a buyer's desire to take the next step, which is write an offer. And that, for a seller, that's what you want. You want this buyer to write you an offer.
You know, it's a mentality thing, and you got to realize that for you, it's a house you've lived in for 10 years. Mm-hmm. For someone moving in, you need to present it as close to new house as you can, because to them, it is a new house.
Exactly, which goes to my third mistake. Thank you for the segue, Hunter. Too much personalization, right? If you leave up Johnny's first, second, third, fourth, all the way through senior year, his like grades, his framed grades or his pictures, that a buyer gets distracted. Like we were talking about it earlier, like we're just simple people. We're simple creatures. And I want them looking at the house. I want a buyer looking at the house, envisioning themselves living there, not getting caught up on, oh, Johnny played shortstop in his junior year of high school at McNary, right? Like, no, I want them to be looking at, man,
that's
look at this.
Oddly specific.
I don't know a Johnny that played baseball. So, shot in the dark.
I was going to say, it's going to be like, you know, they had all fours in first grade, and by fifth grade, they were all threes.
It's going
and by
downhill.
High school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why are you trying to show everybody Johnny kind of gave up a little bit?
Right. No, we want.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Is it something with the house that did it?
It's cursed. No. We want buyers to start envisioning themselves there, not getting sucked into the story of your life, which. No, the story of your life as a seller is important, but not, we want to disengage that when we're selling it.
Yeah.
Right.
So there needs to be a bit of a runway. Like you said, it isn't a market necessarily where you want to just like, I decided today I'm going to put my house. You got a runway up to that. So you want to assess that. What do you suggest to not make that mistake? Somebody to come in and sort of dispassionately say, you need to look at those scuff marks, or to kind of give you an overview and say, here are some of the cosmetic things that you can fix right now that you could do in a weekend.
Well, I think it kind of depends on what your overall timeline is, right? Like if you've already talked with Elizabeth, you've got your house where you're going to next already lined up, then our timeline's going to be tighter, which is okay. But we would really recommend at least 30 days out from when you want the house to be ready for showing, like buyers to walk through. I would say at a minimum 30 to 45 days before that. depending on the scope of some of the work that might need to be done in your house, right? Some buyers or some sellers, excuse me, they can do those little projects in a weekend. The other thing you might need to take into account is where are you at in your stage of life? If you have little kids playing Little League right now and they're on travel teams or what have you, or they're playing 7-on-7 flag football tournaments, you might need more time just because your off time is committed to other places. So maybe that timeline stretches out about 60 to 90 days so that we, once we're ready, because really we tell people when we pull the trigger of putting your house active, we got to be ready and we have to be, I mean, as Amy has said, and I've said it before, you got to be in it to win it from the get.
Well, and you know, we are in the day and age of internet and real estate listings, like you said, when they're new, they hit the, they go out in mass immediately.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And unlike the grocery store shelves, the oldest don't move to the front.
No.
They disappear into the background.
They get pushed further and further and further down. And I think we said it before, a buyer will start to look at it and go, there's something wrong here. Why hasn't someone picked this up? There's something wrong. Whether that's price, whether that's the way it was presented, or there's some other major project that the seller hasn't told me about, and that's why it hasn't sold, right? So we really, you want to prepare as, depending on your life circumstances, don't wait until like 2 days before you want to be in the market to call a realtor. Because a realtor, Denise, to your point, can come in and say, hey, you know, you've got these 12 years of photos for Johnny. We should take those down. And when you do, make sure you patch and paint and make sure we do a good job so we don't have like pock marks all over. Or
you the ghosts of Johnny's pictures on the wall.
Or, those are lovely. Yeah.
Or your fence is falling down. We should get that, because a buyer will be like, they obviously don't care about their fence. They must not care about my house.
That's another thing. Well, that's, you talk about people being busy and not waiting to wait too long. A lot of people, I don't know if regular maintenance is a part of the daily routine for some, you know, sometimes things, you just get busy and you just don't keep up on it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And it all of a sudden sneaks up on you. And now you've got like 50 things you've got to get done rather than trying to keep up on it as you go along, which I know is hard. I'm guilty of that. I'm like, oh, I can wait a week.
Yeah.
Okay. 2 years later, I guess I better get to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, getting in touch with a realtor ahead of time, some of our lives, like I'm busy. All of my friends are busy. And I might not want, I might put a premium, I personally put a premium on the work getting done. It doesn't necessarily have to be by me. But getting in touch with a realtor, like at the McLeod Group Network, we can get you in touch with vendors that can take care of those things. I can put you in contact with a contractor who can fix that fence. Or an electrician who's going to put up new smoke detectors for if you don't want to do it, or whatever. We can get you in touch with those folks so that the work still gets done and we can present you properly without you feeling like you're going to pull your hair out. We got options. Yeah. But you got to start the, you kind of, like a locomotive, you got to get those wheels in motion. Sometimes it goes slow at first, and then once it's ready to roll, it's barreling through.
So in the timeline, Elizabeth, for you, for getting that pre-approval letter, or you know, talking finance with you, what kind of a timeline are we looking? Do you, you know, from I got my letter, now I want to do what I got to do. This is more from the seller, from the buyer side. But where do you fall in this process as far as, you know, helping folks out and making sure that they've got all their ducks in the row?
So once, well, we do that before you go shopping.
Yes. Do that first.
We don't need you walking through people's houses if you're not qualified. That's just kind of weird and creepy. So I don't want to, you know what I mean? If you can't buy my house, why are you in it? That's, you know,
well,
so.
Maybe you have good cookies.
Yeah, sure. Candy. My granddaughter loves the candy. You know, from our perspective, what we're going to do is get all your documentation, and in certain circumstances we will actually send it all the way through underwriting if something's a little iffy, and we will send it through to underwriting to make sure it's all good to go, there's no hiccups, hangups, or anything. And that's actually can strengthen your offer as well, because a seller who gets a pre-approval that says, oh, by the way, we've already put it through underwriting, we just need the property now, you're going to feel a lot more confident in taking that option. So we do that as a courtesy or as needed, you know, based on the scenario. Once you get the pre-approval letter, it's good for 90 days. And that's just basically because the credit reports last 90 days.
Right.
And then
right.
at the end of 90 days, we have to repull it. And we're constantly, you know, getting updated pay stubs, documentation, things like that throughout the process. But I mean, I have people literally that are out there shopping right now. I think the one I was texting with this morning, I've had him pre-approved since last summer. Just hasn't found the right house, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody works at their pace. He has a very specific property he's looking for. And, you know, and the other thing we're looking at is a lot of people looking for like the multi-generational houses that could possibly have an ADU added, things like that. So it really depends, again, back on the buyer and what's going on in their life. And so this goes forward with every contract, you know.
And it's interesting, just to kind of segue back to what you were talking about, Annie. You've got a buyer that's set up in what Elizabeth just described. You definitely want, if he's been looking for almost a year, you really want your house to be positioned so that when he sees it, because he's all ready to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's, again, that comes into that presentation part and preparation. Because once he gets the notice that my listing that meets his criteria is ready to roll, they go. So, example, I worked with some buyers, like I mentioned last week. New house came on the market on Thursday. We saw it Thursday night. We submitted an offer on Friday.
Wow.
Yeah. Right? And it was fast. Like, we are not messing around. But I can tell you, we have shown them probably about half a dozen other properties in the last 60 to 90 days, because they are similar to Elizabeth's example. They're selective. Like buyers have the options to be selective now. And, you know, I kind of had to joke with them. I said, my grandma used to say, if you can find 80 to 85% of what you want in a house, you should buy it. Mm-hmm. And this house had 85% of what they wanted. It did have those scuff marks on the baseboards, but they were willing to look past it because it had 85% of what they want. But they didn't have to buy on it. I mean, they didn't have to move on it. It just was like, this is, it hit almost everything, but they were being choosy leading up to that.
Yeah, and like you both described, I mean, the market has changed that way. So to make sure that you don't make those mistakes, so that you're really ready to go, and you're just this beautiful thing, this beautiful property out there that somebody like who's been working with Elizabeth can jump right on. I mean, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, okay. Amy used to say, I mean, and we're kind of getting back to those days, a pricing war and a beauty contest.
Yeah,
we are definitely back in that swing of, you want your house to look nice and be nice, right? Take care of it and priced, not in some cases aggressively, but priced realistically, right? Like I said, you don't want to be, you can't get ahead of the wave and expect it to catch up with you. That is not happening anymore.
Yeah. I think you set your expectations realistically up front. I had a couple opportunities to go through some houses that were for sale, an open house thing. Yeah. And I don't normally get to do that, right? So that's a new thing for me when I actually leave the office and I'm away from a computer. And so I actually see what the realtors are looking at. And I walked in one and it had beautiful, it was very, very nice, but it had this like cove thing. It was like a sitting room. Mm. And it was this dark purple. And I'm like, dude, you need to tell them to paint that white. It darkened it so much. And it's just those little things like, I went, wow, right there. You're like, that'd be really cool. But it seems so small just because it's such a dark color and the light wasn't reflecting well and everything. And so I thought, gosh, you know, as an agent, that has to be really, because I'm just blunt. I mean, I talk numbers, I talk credit scores. So I'm like, how do you gently say that to someone? Like, I would just recommend. So I figured out a trick. What you do is you have them take a picture with ChatGPT and put it in there and you say, how would I make this room look better to sell my house? And it will redo it for you. Take the feelings out of it.
There you go. Pro
there
tip,
you go,
pro
Anna.
Tip. We're going to take our
depersonalization.
There you go. Depersonalization.
All right. We got to take our last break. We're running a little long there. We're talking Real Estate Insights with Anna Parker and Elizabeth Smith. Come on back.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. We are wrapping up Real Estate Insights with Anna Parker from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams, and Elizabeth Smith from the Smith Mortgage Team. Okay, so Anna, so you've done everything right. You know, you've got everything out on the market. Now you've got people coming through. You've got people that are, Elizabeth has approved them and everything's golden. But what are the first things they notice within like 8 seconds when they come in there? What's the first thing that was going to hit them?
How they feel when they look at your property. That's what that's going to hit them right away. And I can
feelings.
100% feelings. So those buyers I mentioned in the last segment, when we went and looked at that house last week, we walked up and immediately the first thing out of the wife's mouth was, this feels like home.
Oh.
Right away. I mean, immediately, the way it was set up, the landscaping, the painting, the front door, even so much. Her husband plays his cards a little close to the chest. He goes, this reminds me of my mom and dad's front door. I mean, are making those kinds of snap assessments and judgments and, more importantly, connections to houses right away. Like, so for a seller, we want to be thinking about how are we presenting it from the street, starting at the street, because they will make that assumption. Those buyers, I showed them another property and they're like, oh, no, I don't like this. There's a manhole off to the side of this house, like a drainage manhole. And they're like, no, we don't want it. I'm like,
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, like, that was the fastest showing, but sure, sounds great. Okay.
And there's no, you have no idea. You can't predict, obviously, that everybody's got their own story that they're coming in, which is why I think you said you want to present as sort of a neutral palette so that they can project themselves into
exactly.
It.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing about it is that buyers are making, they truly do make those kind of snap assessments and judgments and connections right away. Like, we had parked across the street. We had barely stepped onto the driveway of the house. And the wife goes, "This just feels like home."
Wow.
Great. Let's continue that on inside and see if it matches.
Yeah.
So they really do, like, landscaping, paint, the cleanliness of your porch. What is your front? Are your lights all working? What, the whole package from the curb appeal forward is important. They're making those connections right away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I will say, once they get inside, that also continues on, right?
Right.
So lighting, that was one of the other things this couple mentioned. They're like, "It feels so bright in here." Well, when we went in, this was smart of the seller, so sellers take note. They turned on absolutely every light that they could.
Smart.
Overhead light, table lights.
It wasn't too much? Wasn't overkill?
No. It wasn't too much because it felt, what was nice about it was, it was the nice, soft, warm light.
Okay.
Not like fluorescent overheads, right? So you got to use some judgment there if you're a
seller. Even the LEDs, which I can't stand them. I'm an old school, give me a, you know, an Edison bulb and whatever.
Yeah.
And I just like a lower light environment. So that's interesting. Yeah. And obviously, I would think things like what the house smells like, that's going to key things in
that's
too.
That's got to be in this list.
Well, I mean, and
that was my first
is.
Thought.
100% it is. And honestly, our olfactory sense, our sense of smell is the deepest tied to memories and emotions for us of all of our senses.
Yep. Yep.
So smell is always a huge factor. So making sure your house smells nice. But one thing I will tell you, please be cautious. So some of the things is, like, you might not notice an odor of your house, but a buyer will 100%.
Yeah.
We had a client that was like, "My house doesn't smell like smoke." I'm like, "It does a little bit." But be careful if you're trying to cover up that smell with, like,
candles.
So if
you walk in and it's cloying, it's like, what are they trying to hide?
Yeah, and those clients, they picked up on it. They're like, "We know they have a cat here, but there is a candle blowing or, like, going, so I can't really get a sense of how intense is that cat smell." So be cautious about things like sprays, candles, little plug-ins, because that can turn a buyer off really quickly. So be mindful of the smells of your house, for sure.
Okay. Hunter, what do we got? About 2 minutes left, Hunter? Because I'm...
We got just over a minute.
Oh,
I want to make sure. Anyone, last one thing that's like, ugh,
hey,
make sure.
So this is the one thing that I've... Clutter and space perception. This is a big piece. Like, we were talked about depersonalization of your house, pulling things out. Whatever you think is in your room, plan on taking about a third of it out. Don't take it all out, because our spatial awareness as humans is bad. So leave some things in there, but pull things out. Tuck them into your garage. Put them into a blue pod that's not in your driveway. And make sure that we still give some sense of what can fit in a room. So.
Yeah, because you don't want it completely bare. I've seen those listings too, and those are very much of a turnoff. So you want it a little personal.
Yeah, because you can't get a sense of, like, can I fit a queen bed and two nightstands in here?
Oh, scale, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Scale inside of a room. We're just not, most people are not great at that. So we want to have something in there, but not like your 500 boxes of Hot Wheels, right?
That
your
would be a
Hot Wheel display shouldn't be, you know, front and center.
Maybe not.
All over.
Maybe
so
not.
All of, I mean, really just good solid advice, and you've got to kind of, you know, check the ego and listen to your realtor. Elizabeth,
yes.
Anna, always a pleasure.
Thank
great information.
You so much.
Like I said, all of this will be in show notes, all of their details, how you find them, how you connect with them. No worries. All right, everybody, that is it for us today. Join us tomorrow. We've got Salem Mayor Julie Hoy on the show.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.